Welcome to 501c3 BS. Much of my work involves teaching the next generation of social sector executives. I do this through work at several universities, including work at Cal State Fullerton's Gianeschi Center, who helps sponsor this program. I also teach online webinars for charityhowto.com. I'm developing a new webinar now on DIY fundraising. Do-it-yourself fundraising has become a big topic recently since the success of the Ice Bucket Challenge. I thought it might be a great topic for the podcast here, so today, I will not be interviewing any guests. I will be parsing through the myths, legends, and facts surrounding DIY fundraising. Welcome to 501c3 BS, deprogramming for organizational growth. I'm your host, Zoot Velasco.
We just need one big fundraiser.
Our clients are our donors.
Bigger is better.
Who cares what the mission statement is?
I work in nonprofits.
Bullshit! What is DIY fundraising? Don't organizations do it themselves all the time? DIY fundraising refers to the ability to get your supporters of your organization to fundraise for you on their own with little or no help from you. At least that's what it is in theory. Is it really possible to get our supporters to fundraise for us? Well, it's not a new concept. Have you ever been asked to go to a supporter's house for dinner so that they can do a pitch on the organization that they love? Have you ever seen an obituary where the family asks you to give money to the deceased's favorite charity in lieu of flowers? Have you read articles about a student who has collected backpacks or pennies or canned goods for the homeless because that student really felt compelled to act? Have you seen people ask for a donation to a charity on Facebook rather than a present for their birthday? Each of these would be a DIY fundraiser, implemented by people on behalf of their favorite organizations. You might say, well, that's great, Zoot, but how do we fit in? They do this on their own, seemingly without our knowledge, right? Well, that's usually not the case. In most cases, the organization is either prompting this altruism or at least partnering in it. Let's back up a bit. Do you remember when we had the episode on the myth of the big gala?
This could be among the biggest heaping piles of bullshit in the history of our industry, yet it keeps getting passed down and propagated for generations. Why? Because this particular piece of cow patty comes wrapped in a bright, shiny box disguised as a great present. Every board member who ever sat on a board is convinced that the best way to bring money into the organization is a big, shiny fundraiser. They know this because it's what they were taught on other boards, and it's what they've always done. They are sure that it works because they have seen it work, or at least they think they've seen it. It is time-tested and proven. Or is it? This is the same line of bullshit that teenage boys use when discussing their sexual exploits. They lie because they think it makes them look better to lie. In fundraising events, the same holds true. An organization will brag about how they cleared $100,000 on their gala. They will talk about how they want to make it bigger next year. They want to make it a bigger part of the budget and grow the organization through growing the gala. They brag about their conquests and their macho ability to get more. You feel inadequate and think, I should be more like them. I've heard this a great deal throughout my career, and every time I've had the opportunity to look at the books and check it out for myself, it's all bullshit. Here is what really is happening. The organization throws a gala every year that is successful in terms of selling tickets and getting sponsors. The board, or a committee of the board, usually think that is their big responsibility of the year. In a series of meetings, the board will ask the staff to put together a list of sponsors and a list of attendees. Then the board will ask the staff to call the list and get rid of duplicates and those who moved out of town. The board will ask the staff to send out invitations and sponsorship letters, which the board will have to approve. It takes several meetings for them to get a letter and invite that they like from the staff. The board calls their friends and gets sponsors and auction items. The board asks the staff to pick up the items and sponsorship. The staff package up the auction items. The staff produce the event with weekly meetings checking in with board committees as it gets close. Eventually, the event happens. The board is everywhere, shaking hands and making speeches while the staff work their asses off in the kitchen and auction tables and supervising volunteers. Those volunteers are usually undertrained, so the staff must redo a lot of what they do. At the end, the budget comes in. The organization received $30,000 in sponsorship, sold $40,000 in tickets, and made $30,000 from the auction and other donations. The expenses were listed as $70,000. The organization netted $30,000. But what will be reported at the next board meeting and in the newspaper is this. We had a very successful fundraising gala this year, bringing in over $100,000, a new high, thanks to our great board committee who made the whole thing happen. And there will be applause at the board meeting. But what really happened? $30,000 came in from sponsors, who would have sponsored the organization anyway, even if there was no gala. They could have just as easily sponsored the programs. So that net was $30,000. The budget didn't include the cost of staff time. They never do. When you look back on what actually happened, you see that the staff are working on this all year with occasional check-ins of the board committee. If you included staff time in the budget, you would see that 10% of all staff salaries are going to the gala. That would add $50,000 in an organization with a $500,000 payroll. If you do that, you see the gala is actually losing $20,000 each year and taking an inordinate amount of staff time away from the mission, programs, and fundraising. In my work at a cultural center, we realized this exact scenario. I told the board, if we have no gala, but work to ensure that the sponsors keep sponsoring us through programs, we can get $30,000 by doing no event at all, rather than losing $20,000 a year on the gala. The board was a great board, and they agreed, and we did exactly that. The next year after changing to this new model, we made money. It freed us up to spend our resources on more productive and mission-based fundraising. Eventually, the board committee missed doing an event, so we asked them to help us with a smaller event that would be not so labor-intensive. That event took 2 weeks to put together, cost nothing, and netted $10,000. Once we got past the bullshit, we could do extraordinary things. There are organizations out there that just won't believe this until they really analyze their own budgets and the hidden costs that are not included. I know one organization that has over $6 million annual budget who does a gala that brings in $325,000 a year, but costs $375,000 a year to produce. I asked them why they continue to do it. The answer? Because some board members really need us to do it, and it keeps us connected to certain donors. Another answer is these big events generate press, prestige, and the thought that this is a successful organization. In other words, it's a lot of show. Those donors would leave without the gala, I asked? No, I don't think so, but the board isn't willing to take that risk. That's another reason we do the same things over and over and expect a different result. I have seen organizations in the news, large, well-run international CBOs that are also NGOs working around the world, and they boast $3 million raised at their splashy annual galas in New York or Los Angeles. I've been to a few of these, but then when you look at their books, 70% of that is expenses, sometimes more. But it's worth it for the press and the perception that they are big, important organizations with many investors. Potential clients call me, meet with me, and guess what their number one thing is to ask? How can we make more money on our gala? There's a real sense that our gala is only making 10% of our budget and we think it could do a lot more. Why did they think that? Because it seems like others are doing much better with their galas. It's a perception in our industry that galas should generate a large chunk of our income. I would say 10% is normal and about what should be expected. Your real income should be coming from the programs as earned income and grants and contracts, social enterprise, other areas. To that they scoff. What? Programs can't make money, they say. I would ask these organizations, what would happen if you did the following? You invited a sponsor to come and take a tour of your programs. You make a pitch and invite them to sponsor the programs instead of the gala. You tell them that's one less rubber chicken dinner that they have to go to, and they can serve the mission directly. I'm guessing all of your sponsors will line up for that. Ours always did. Knowing your fundraising is mission-based, that's a good thing. Now your fundraising is mission-based. And you can get the board to do the part they always did, call their friends and get sponsors and auction items. But instead of having a gala, the sponsors will be handled as I just outlined, and the auction will be held online as a charity auction site, such as biddingforgood.com. You could still make $40,000 off an online auction, and staff can link the auction to the organization's social media, which helps marketing and may bring in younger bidders, which could translate to younger investors in the organization. And if you really want to throw an event, you could try putting on a silent tea. That is where you send out an invite to a gala. That is a silent tea party. In the invite, you include a tea bag. You tell them, we are all too busy to attend another event with long speeches and rubbery chicken. Use this tea bag to have your own event and just send us the money. Then you can include a link to where they can see your programs. If the invite is cute enough, it could be very effective. You could also host a thank you party for volunteers as an appreciation event and ask the sponsors to sponsor that. You could host a simple barbecue or pizza party at one of the organization's key programs and take attendees on a program tour so they can really get immersed into the mission of the organization. Include an ask at the end. These kinds of events take almost no money to produce and bring in great returns because people are connecting to the mission. That is something for which you can send out a press release and try to get press to come as well. My experience is that press want to cover an actual interesting program rather than another gala. You can also figure out other fun ways throughout the year that you can connect investors to the mission. Make sure you are writing your annual appeal letters, taking part in Giving Day events given by local community foundations, and doing all the normal, great ways of fundraising that are not bullshit. Now let's look at a budget from these kinds of changes. Your $30,000 in sponsors are still there. Your $40,000 in auction is also still there, but now online, generating more marketing and investors. Most, if not all, of your event expenses are gone. Your staff expenses are gone because now everything is mission-based. If you make $10,000 for a smaller event, you will end up netting $80,000 with a very small event rather than losing $20,000 on a time-consuming gala. Smaller is better here. And don't get me wrong. There are some gala-type events that make great money for organizations, some in the hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars. But these successful large-scale fundraisers fall into one of these three categories. Either they are 1, an event that has grown organically and developed over a long period of time and become a cultural event of the season in a town that hosts it. In some towns, these are major festivals, races, sporting events, or car shows that take over the entire town and are the thing the town is known for doing. Think about things like the Pageant of the Masters in Laguna Beach, California, the Ashland Shakespeare Festival in Ashland, Oregon, the Rose Parade in Pasadena, or the St. Patrick's Day Parade in New York City. Each started life as a small fundraiser for an organization. Some have been doing it for over 100 years, and most for at least 20 years to become an institution. Do you have that kind of long-range thinking and investment into an event? 2. Another type of event is one that's thrown by a single business or a wealthy individual on behalf of an organization, where they do all the work. In a small town near Los Angeles, there's a Hollywood-type manager of the stars guy who lives there and loves his church. Every year, he makes his big-name clients perform at the church festival, which has taken over the town. The whole thing is donated, and every bit of money makes a profit for the church, and the entire town shows up to see their favorite stars perform. Or 3, a small-time event where everyone kicks in a good idea and it gets it off the ground. This is the most tragic of fundraisers in the long term. A CBO has a great idea. They pitch it to the town, usually with someone powerful in town politics behind it. Everyone jumps on board. They host a giant festival and they make a great deal of money because all the sponsors are behind it and they are up to their ears in volunteers. The second year, there's a little less enthusiasm to give so much because we've done it already. Then the weather turns bad, or the food runs out, or there's a bomb threat, or some scandal. Soon everyone is criticizing the event. Every year it loses momentum. The organizers don't want to let go of their idea, and they keep thinking it will turn around, but it never does. And it never raises as much money as the first year. This happens quite a lot. Townspeople are going around talking about that stupid event, or why can't they let it go? Now, in the first case, the event takes decades to develop into a cultural institution that can change a town. In the second case, the fundraiser's thrown for you, and that's the best way to have a fundraiser, if you can get it. And in the last case, everyone gets on board with a new idea, and then eventually it fizzles out. If you can't get someone to throw your event for you, it's much better to grow organically, but these can take many years before they become profitable. If you don't have that kind of time to waste, get out while you're ahead. The next time somebody on your board says at a meeting, "All we need is one big fundraiser," don't fall for that bullshit. They might as well say, "We just need to dig for gold in the hills." You are just as likely to succeed in either case.
So, if big galas suck away staff time for little return, what is the opposite of that? What if you could energize and excite your key supporters to do the work for you and raise more money than you ever did on the big gala? Is that possible with little or no staff time? But let me dispel a myth. The organization will not be built by another big ice bucket challenge. That was lightning in a bottle, and lightning rarely strikes twice, especially when and where you want it to. But you know what is not rare? Fire. You can easily spread a small flame and grow it to a nice warm fire that burns brightly, warming your organization for a long time. So, how, Zoot? I hear you asking this now. How do we create that fire that makes people go out and fundraise for us? It really isn't as hard as you might think, providing you have a mission that drives people to care about you, and a way to reach those people. So yes, first you need to have a communication stream with your key supporters. I'm going to start by saying, if you don't have the email addresses of key supporters and them following you on Facebook or other social media, nothing I say will work. If you have an organization with any success at all, you should at least have these simple things in place. You are hopefully sending out a weekly or bi-weekly e-blast filled with stories of the wonders of your organization, the great people whose lives are better because you are there, the great programs that change people's lives, thank you letters from lives that you've touched, and your social media is filled with weekly shares from your participants showing what great things they are doing in your programs, pics of these great things that happen through your doors, and shares from staff and volunteers showing the amazing people that deliver your mission. If you are doing these things, the community is already getting a window into who you are seeing the great things you do. And occasionally, these e-blasts and posts might even ask for funds. Very occasionally. Occasionally, there might even be a crowdfunding campaign for a special project or program or an emergency. And if you're good at telling these regular stories on your emails and Facebook, you're getting money from these occasional campaigns as well. People are with you. They're responding to you. They see what a difference you make in the community. DIY fundraising takes this organic, grassroots flow of funding through storytelling to the next level. Imagine if you see funds come in from these small, occasional campaigns from one funder. Not a wealthy person necessarily. Not a corporation, but a normal, everyday person who has decided what you do is important and responds when you put out an ask. He or she may give $100 every time you do your annual appeal, and $100 at your spring appeal. And they may give $200 when you had that emergency plumbing issue, and you put it on Facebook or did a GoFundMe campaign for it. You notice that they're always there for you. Most of us have a few people like this at our organizations. What would happen if we cultivate that funder in a normal way? Most fundraising people would look at moving them up the chain to the $1,000 levels, then the $5,000 level, $10,000 level, and beyond, estate gifts, and see what they can get out of that funder. And most of the time, this may fail. And often, if it's done too quickly, it will alienate the funder. But sometimes it will work. But what if you met with this funder and you find out that they're not wealthy? They're middle class. They are already giving you the most that they can afford to give. There is no well where there's magic funding coming from. They have given all that they can. This happens a great deal. There are many funders like this in all of our organizations. And what if you ask that person to be on a committee to help strategize new ways of getting funding? Why are you asking me? They would say. Well, because you represent the people we need to reach. We need 100 more people just like you. There is nothing dishonest here. You are reaching out to an impassioned funder to help with not just their funding, but to help with something bigger, reaching others like them. In the course of this meeting, you might suggest some proven methods of DIY fundraisers. Would you consider throwing a party at your house as a fundraiser for this organization, or spreading the word amongst your friends? We can make it fun. Our funder Bob, he loves wines and he would donate some wines for the event. We'll help promote it on our media. Is that too much? What about just in lieu of birthday gifts on your Facebook page for your birthday? That would be the simplest thing. Maybe they have a great idea for a stunt. Hey, I got an idea. What if I challenge my friends to a Fitbit challenge? You know, we all kind of challenge each other on Fitbit anyway. What if we did a Fitbit challenge of 30,000 steps over a weekend? And they give a penny a step. That would be like $300 per person. It would be like a walkathon, but in your own space and time, just synced up online. Hey, that's a great idea. Okay, I think I just invented that idea on this podcast. But who knows, maybe others have already done it. But you can have that idea. This isn't the only way to do DIY fundraisers, to target a funder and put them up to it. It is only one way. But if you do this method, let it be their idea. Dwight D. Eisenhower said, "Leadership is getting other people to do what you want them to do because they want to do it." No one wants to do your ideas. People are very invested, however, in their own ideas. Okay. So maybe you don't want to pounce on a poor, unsuspecting funder that's been very good to you. Fine. Let's move on to another method. We already established that you have all these great weekly e-blasts and social media posts that your followers look forward to. hearing great stories about how you are changing the world and seeing the pictures. They look forward to this in their feed. I know I do for some of the charities that I really care about and love. What if after weeks of fabulous stories, when you haven't posted a call for funding in a while, you show a story of someone in a similar organization across the country who did some amazing DIY fundraiser for their organization? You include a great picture of them shaking hands with the mayor and a link to the article that shows them as the hero of the city. Jack Jones hosts a Fitbit challenge for his office and raises $25,000 for his local animal shelter. At the end of the post or e-blast, because let's face it, you're going to share this every way you can, you would say, "Wouldn't it be great if we could have this in our community?" If you are interested in hosting a Fitbit challenge of your own or some other idea to help us out, please contact Mary so that we can help, or whoever the name is and whatever the number is. Now you have modeled the behavior you want and you've put it out there. When they get back to you excited to do it, it's no longer your idea that you put out there, it's their idea. And they have a template of how to do it that you gave them from Jack Jones in another city across the country. They don't have to reinvent the wheel. The wheel is made. They just have to make their own. Just by doing this, you have moved past getting your mission out there and raising funds for it. You have empowered others to be part of your mission in new and exciting ways. And before long, there will be Fitbit parties and offices all over town. What if you just ran a story on your feed about this podcast and let your supporters take it from there? You may get some people doing some very creative fundraisers for you. Restaurants could decide to ask patrons to round up the bill and the change goes to their charity. Social butterflies might throw parties for you. Barbershop quartets might do singing telegrams on your behalf. The opportunities are endless. There is still one other method of DIY fundraiser I have not mentioned. What if you made DIY a part of your fundraising plans and policies? How? Well, I once managed a historic site that hosted many weddings as a social enterprise business. The site had been in town for 100 years. People loved it as an architectural gem. Many people asked to have their memorial services there as well. So we made memorial services a DIY fundraiser. If you wanted to have a memorial service on our site, we would apply the site fee to our endowment, meaning the deceased would be on a big plaque in the middle of our center that said they were part of the Legacy Club. The more money the family could raise, the bigger the mention would be on the plaque. A $10,000 mention was much bigger than a $5,000 one, and they could ask for donations in lieu of flowers. Family members would often give in memory of the deceased. In this way, we doubled our endowment to almost $1 million in less than a decade. It also put attention on our endowment for our own supporters who were planning their own estates. As I was leaving, a single gift came in from a supporter who passed away of about $500,000 in property that will be added to the endowment when sold. When CEO of a cultural center, we had a youth council that eventually became a brain trust of our interns. We had as many as 60 interns a year from 7 different colleges. We encouraged them to come up with DIY fundraisers for us with their peers. We got ideas like the world's largest game of Twister on our lawn, croquet tournaments, and talent shows. In another case, we got local chefs to do wine dinners on our behalf. I have seen other organizations get their youth to organize penny collections at schools and raise thousands. There are DIY fundraisers on Etsy with crafters and quilters selling their wares for their favorite charities. I saw an art center that had a pottery program. The teacher hosted a chili cook-off, and the participants got to keep the homemade chili bowls made by the potters. Neighbors once organized a block party garage sale for a local community center, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. Dinner parties, travel tours, food festivals, food tours, Facebook birthday asks, in lieu of flowers, walkathons, online challenges, office challenges, passing the hat, poker parties, concerts, recitals, talent shows, world record events, beach and park cleanups, garage sales, penny drives, rounding up checks, beer pong, board game tournaments, sports competitions, singing competitions, poetry slams, singing telegrams, and more. Whew! If you can think it, you can do it. I myself have done dinner parties, train tours, and food tours to raise tens of thousands of dollars for my favorite charities while I had a great time doing things I love. So I've been on both sides of this coin. I've been the organization soliciting do-it-yourself fundraisers, and I've been the funder who's done the do-it-yourself fundraiser for an organization, and it is great either way. There's no end to great ideas. There are infinite ways to raise money over the web and IRL in real life. The key is the same keys to all fundraising. The key is the same as it is for all fundraising. Tell great stories that hook your supporters into a desire to help. Build those relationships with your supporters, investors, and funders. You get nothing if you don't ask. DIY fundraisers is just another way to get people involved and raise money. Think outside the box. Under-promise and over-deliver. Help your supporters where you can, especially by getting the word out of their efforts on your behalf and showing up for the event and supporting them. And tell the great story of your success after the event. DIY fundraisers in my own work has helped me double my endowment and raised about $50,000 a year for my organization outside of the big gala fundraiser that we actually stopped doing because it was losing money. If you want to know more about DIY fundraisers, you can take my webinar on charityhowto.com. I hope this has opened your eyes to some great new ways to raise funds for organizations both large and small. Thank you for listening to 501c3 BS, Deprogramming for Organizational Growth. I'm your host, Zu Velasco. 501c3 BS is sponsored by the Gianeschi Center for Nonprofit Research at California State University Fullerton and the Mahalo School of Business. Join us at the Summer School for Nonprofits for one amazing week every August. Gianeschi is spelled G-I-A-N-N-E-S-C-H-I. That's G-I-A-N-N-E-S-C-H-I, Gianeschi Center for Nonprofit Research at California State University Fullerton and the Mahalo School of Business. Check out my Twitter feed at 501c3BS, my webpage at zootvelasco.com, and my book, The First 100 Days, on Amazon. The music is provided to us from our good friends at the traditional Brazilian choral group, Grupo Falso Baiano, and Amy Molinelli. Find them at grupofalsobaiano.com. Thank you for listening. Have a great day free from BS.